Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast.
Hello, everybody. This is David Nagel, and welcome to the Successful Mind Podcast. Today, my guest is Dr. Laura Lyle. Dr. Laura, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, David. How are you today?
Fantastic. What are you up to? Tell us about yourself.
Well, you know, I'm up to all kinds of good things. I've set a lofty goal of effectively changing how healthcare is delivered. So, you know, putting out there, trying to help improve the way we're partnering with patients and helping people in this journey, because I feel that healthcare has really been challenging for patients, and the system is failing a lot of patients, and we truly need to fix the broken system.
Well, you do, if I understand this correctly, you do, your medicine's really tailored to the individual. You're really focused on what their specific needs are, instead of just throwing down a broad spectrum of, plug in and fix this, you know, an aspirin works for everybody type thing. You're really into compound hormones, from what I understand.
I am. So my philosophy and what I realized a long time ago was that we can't look at a moment in time. Just like stockbrokers look at the stock market and then they have predictive value when they have numbers, we have the ability to look analytically at an individual's blood work in more of a trend analysis, and it gives us predictive value to be able to optimize individuals' health and wellness. And I truly believe that as we're going into our second prime and as we're aging, even younger people with illnesses, we have to know our bodies, learn about what numbers we need to keep optimized. So for example, following a C-reactive protein, that's a marker of inflammation. Most of your doctors aren't going to be checking that when you go in for your wellness visit. But a CRP will actually, keeping that below 1.0 can lower your overall risk of cancer by 16%. And so we really want to help empower patients to, what I say, get A's or in all their courses or in honors courses. Because if you think about it, and most people don't realize, it's a bell curve on blood work. So it's the 5th to the 95th percentile. So when you go into your doctor and say, how am I doing? And they call and say, your blood work looks fine. Well, fine can be a very broad range. You might be fine, but you're at the 6th percentile. And I don't know about you, but I like to excel and have, you know, everything at the positive, the 95th percentile.
Right. I saw a really interesting interview with you and Suzanne Summers. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that she said on there that kind of jumped onto the screen to me was that based on what she's going on, the different stressors in her day might require different hormone levels because based on the compound hormones or whatever that she's taking. And it was interesting that I heard that because I had been listening to something else a few days ago where there were some doctors talking about how if you take blood work at different types of the day, or if you were to take it 5 days in a row, your cholesterol might not be the same 5 days in a row. Your hormones might not be the same 5 days in a row. So when a person gets their blood work done, if I understand this right, it's like a marker in time. Right. It's like, here's just a snapshot of where you were at 10 a.m. on Thursday, but it doesn't necessarily show an overall picture of health or disease or what's going on.
And depending on which marker you're looking at, for example, there is a marker called an A1C, which actually is a retrospective 3-month average of blood sugars. But what you're saying is absolutely correct. And so that is why I'm a big advocate. You know, we're taught as medical doctors and trained to look at what's in front of us in that appointment. And that number in isolation has very little value because it is a trend. And so we look at the time of day, when they had the blood work done, always asking what's going on in their life at that time, how are they feeling, and applying the subjective to the objective. And what happens over time is it gives you the ability to see the trends, and you can actually work with that patient and educate them when you use this diet or you use berberine, let's say, as a supplement. We can then 3 months later track that and see, are you heading in the right direction? We set goals, and then we apply, whether it's lifestyle changes or supplements that we make in the compounding lab specific to them. But then having that objective data every 3 to 4 months initially to try and make sure we're on the right track. But it's absolutely true. If you just go in once a year and get a blood draw, you know, that's really a moment in time, completely. False sense of security.
Yeah, false sense of security is right. So when should a person in their life be looking at the things that you look at? Should that start early, young, or is that more middle-aged?
Well, it's great to do it when you're feeling well, because we, you know, in all honesty, especially in women's health, you know, when they're feeling great, it's always good to have those markers as a baseline. When I started into this, my practice, that's been almost 30 years now. You know, looking back, we used to focus on middle age. But what happened over time is that individuals that were in their 40s, 30s, 50s, when they're starting to not feel so well, have energy, they know something's wrong, to come in and they want to get assessed. Now their children that are in high school and college have become patients because they see the value of optimizing how you feel so your performance can be optimized as well. And so what I love about working with families is that fact, as a matter of fact, I have one family, I have all four generations, and the gentleman's 101 years old, the great-grandfather. And so it's a really neat to be able to take care of the generations and watch the, be able to learn from the older generations. But so a lot of times, and heading off to college is a good time because we know your life's going to change most likely dramatically. There may be drinking, there may be late nights, not getting enough studying. So in kind of partnering with these individuals to just let them do the blood work, explain, fill in any deficits if they're low on D or B, or kind of educate them, you know, hey, these are some of the things we need to be watching for. They come home on spring break or on a winter break and check those levels again, they can see cause and effect. And it really is empowering to young people as they go. Now, they may not be quite as a compliant, you know, but they're got sure. busy lives, but the reality is they're learning. And by the time those individuals now become parents, they now understand and have it's like habits, right? They are creating healthy habits to manifest their own good and great health and wellness. And I do feel we have control of that. You know, for so many years, we used to take a family history. And if you had bad genes, well, you know, my grandfather, all of my relatives on my mom's side died very young in their 70s of heart disease. I'm blessed to have my mother alive at 84, but I believe it's because, she was my guinea pig. And at 33 years ago, she was the first compound I ever made and has been very compliant about following very methodically all of her blood work. And she's now the only living relative and first generation cousins, you know, have all had heart disease, and she had a stent when she was in her 50s. She's 84.
Wow.
So, you know, when you think about it, we have control. And what people, I think a lot of times in, and maybe it's the same in your industry, but people don't feel like they have control of their lives. And yet
I agree.
They have complete control, and they have it within them to do the right things. And they just have to tap into that. And very much like financial success, we can have success in wellness. And my goal is to age with my patients gracefully and to also help them to be able to not just grow old, because it's about having a great quality of life and length of life. And I want individuals in their second prime, you know, to not feel like they're getting old. They're actually at the beginning of something really great, you know, this phase in their life. But you have to feel well in order to have that.
There's a lot of talk, and there has been for a few years, about systemic inflammation in the body and the things that that causes or contributes to, such as heart disease and cancer and diabetes and all that. What is the cause of the inflammation? Because it seems like that's something new that maybe we have only in the last 40 years or so, as far as, well, I mean, people are more overweight than they've ever been before. There's more processed foods than there ever been before. But what is the cause of the inflammation itself?
Well, it's both what I consider multifactorial, which always makes a complex answer. But, you know, the key, I believe, and the most common causes that I see, of course, is lifestyle. Processed foods, as you mentioned, is one. Also, our food, you know, we have a lot of organic, if you're not eating organic and you're getting a lot of environmental toxins, we know that the environmental toxin load today compared to a patient 20 years ago, it's completely different. And also stress can increase. So if we're not getting a good night's sleep and we're worrying about things, and that will drive it up. So injuries, viruses, of course, are the common things that increase it. But we also now have jumped into a world in the last 10 years of gut health. We know that leaky gut is definitely a cause. So if I have somebody who's everything is looking really good except their C-reactive protein, this inflammatory marker, you know, one of the things we'll start delving into is evaluating zonulin levels for leaky gut. So it truly is, it's changed, David. You know, that's the beauty of being in history, right? As you are in this game for so long, you know, I remember in the 80s when I was a pharmacist, you know, people don't realize, and probably a lot of your listeners don't even remember, you know, there weren't over-the-counter products. Like, I was one of the first probably 40 pharmacists in this country hand-making glucosamine, hand-making vitamin D3. It didn't exist. And now we have, you know, this multi-billion dollar industry that people are just grabbing things and taking them and because of inflammation, right? And to me, how do you know if you have inflammation or risk if you're not doing methodical blood tests to learn cause and effect? You got to understand that. Mm-hmm.
So is the inflammation leading to the gut problem, or the gut problem leading to the inflammation?
So the gut problem will lead to the inflammation. But again, there are other causes of inflammation. One common one I'm seeing in younger women is the fact that it used to be fine to take birth control. They didn't, you know, women took it for years. What we're seeing in these 20-year-olds, these newer generation birth controls are quite strong, and they are pro-inflammatory. So they're causing. We'll follow blood work and see, you know, a C-reactive protein that was before below the 1, where it should be, all of a sudden is 20. It's very high. This person's lethargic. They don't feel well. So switching off of some of these birth controls and finding alternatives that are safer. So as time evolves, so does what we have to do in medicine, because the human body is amazing. I marvel at the ability it has to heal itself, but it also can't overcome sometimes the overwhelming things we're doing. Dairy is another one. I don't feel everyone needs to be gluten-free, but, you know, definitely keeping some of the glutens down in some individuals are all pro-inflammatories. Insulin resistance, having high insulin levels. If somebody puts on extra weight, their fasting insulin's running high, we know that that's going to be pro-inflammatory as well. So as we correct those things by working with the person and getting them what they need in their supplements and lifestyle modifications, usually it's just amazing to see how it all ties together. When the 3-month average of blood sugar comes down, the A1C, all of a sudden now the HDL or good cholesterol is going up. And so by showing patients the objective data, it's not just about taking it some supplements and eating different. It's about learning from within what they can do to influence their genetic expression of disease as they age.
I got to ask you this question because it's fascinating to me. How did you get involved in this?
Well, that's a very long story. It's evolved over time. You know, I was supposed to be a trial lawyer. My whole family are lawyers. I don't have anyone in medicine in my family. Father, brother, sister, all lawyers. Dad was a prosecutor. Mom was a dean of a business college. And when I was in high school, I worked in my dad's law office, and I knew right away That was not my calling. I knew this. I loved chemistry. And so my senior year, I announced somewhere, somebody said, oh yes, and Laura's going to be going to law school. And I said, actually, I'm going to pharmacy school. You know, it was kind of a moment, right? Just like everybody gets quiet. And, you know, I will never forget this because I chose pharmacy because I believed that I loved chemistry and I loved people. And it just made sense. And so I went to Ohio State. But when I gave commencement speech at high school, I came out and my father said to me later that night, he said, I was in a small town, a very rural town in Ohio. Okay. And he said, you know, you're a big fish in a small pond right now. But he said, you're going to be in a very large pond and you're going to be a very small fish and it's going to be easy to drown. And he walks away.
Oh, encouraging.
Well, it's interesting you say that because, yes, at first it was like, oh, you know, that wind out of your sails kind of feeling. But within a minute, I thought the thought I had was immediately, well, then I better learn how to swim well, right? You know, I knew that I had to work hard and to get to do what I needed to do. So part of that was proving, you know, that I could do it. And so went through and loved pharmacy, came out, worked for a year in retail pharmacy. And I'm now, in my early 20s and managing this store. And I could see all the inefficiencies. Now, we don't have an entrepreneurial family. I mean, yes, they're lawyers, but they're not in an entrepreneurial spirit. And I remember looking around this pharmacy saying, we need to be delivering to the elderly. Why are we, you know, I could just see the things that needed to be done. And my son was born. He was, Carson was 6 months old. He's now 29 and a medical doctor. I remember thinking, I need to change this. And so I woke up one day and had this strong calling. I just thought I need to either go back to medical school or I need to open my own pharmacy. And within a split second, I thought to myself, well, it seems a lot easier to open a pharmacy than go to school for 7 years, right? Which either one is a little bit, you know, a lot of work either way. Right. So I made up my mind. Well, you know, at this point I'm 24 years old. And I knew I needed to have help. So I went to a medicine shop franchise. And of course, they were very good at selling because I knew right where I wanted my pharmacy. And they said, well, you have to give us $18,000 down to lock in that area. Now, back in the late 80s, that was a lot of money. I'm a kid, right? Yeah, I just bought my first house. I had no equity in this home. And I thought to myself, I need to get $18,000 because they were putting a push on it to the point where if you don't, others are interested. Now, of course, looking back 30 years later, I can say probably not many people were interested in that area, that's what I needed to hear. So when I came home, I went to the local banker and I sat down with him and I said, I want to open a pharmacy. Now this town maybe had 30,000. It's not a big town. Okay. And it had three or four pharmacies already. It didn't need a pharmacy. And he said, I tell him this and he said, well, we don't need a pharmacy. You know, Leonard's has been here for 100 years and blah, blah, blah. And I said, actually you do. You need the type of pharmacy I want to put in. We need to service the community differently. And so I'm explaining my position. And finally, you know, he says, well, what do you need? And I said, I need $18,000. And he goes, okay. And you could see, he was like, well, maybe we could do that over something. And I kind of stood up and I don't know what made me stand up. He was a very tall man and sitting down. And I just said, he goes, when do you need it? And I said, I need it by 4 o'clock today. And he looked at me with his, you know, like, that's not going to happen kind of look. And that's when I stood up and I just said, sir, thank you so much for believing in me. And I won't let you down. And I walked out. And I just said, I'll be back. And by gosh, there was a check for $18,000 at 4 o'clock that day. Mailed it in, started the pharmacy, and it was one of the first drive-through pharmacies in the country. They were unheard of. And it was an old, like, Wendy's building. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, I had a drive-through. And with a small child, I'm like, everyone should have a drive-through. Who wants to carry a child through a store? Who wants to have somebody slip and fall on the ice? Had to really fight tooth and nail for that drive-through. I was mocked. You can't believe the state board. Everyone thought it was the craziest idea. But I knew it made sense to do so. And then in the front of this pharmacy was a solarium. And I did not want to have, I wanted it to be different. And I thought, I'm going to put a coffee shop in. So I put an espresso, cappuccino. This was way before Starbucks or any coffee shops were around. But it was an Italian community. And I thought this will be a good place for people to wait. And the irony is I named it RX Cafe, just what the doctor ordered, not knowing, you know, 8 years later, I would go on to go to medical school, right? And that very coffee would sustain me on my drive there.
Sure.
But so I jumped into the pharmacy arena and became well known in teaching other pharmacists because it was such a new thing in this country back at that time for compounding. And I liked doing inspirational speaking. And so I'm kind of at the pinnacle of my career. And every day I spent all day long problem solving for doctors and also saying, well, if this wasn't prescribed, then they wouldn't need this. And then this wouldn't have happened. They'd be better off taking nothing. So, you know, one day, and I call it my 6 month postpartum epiphany, but I had my second child, Chloe, she's now 25 and running my headquarters in Atlanta. But she was 6 months old as well when, you know, I woke up and I just said, I have to go back to medical school. Now, that was about the craziest. I mean, truly, my family thought I had postpartum depression, I think.
Yeah.
It's not normal to have, but it was so strong and I was so compelled. I knew I could help so many people. And so at that point, I literally found the closest medical school, which was Medical College of Ohio, and drove an hour there, said, where do I sign up? Had no idea it was hard to get in. Never crossed my mind. And so they put me with this Dr. Mary Smith, and I think she just retired this year. And she sits me down in her office and she said, well, dear, you know, it's hard to get into medical school. You know, how would you do in the MCATs? And I didn't even know what an MCAT. I was that naive. So she said, well, go take this exam 3 or 4 months later and then apply. Well, I haven't had physics in 10 years at this point, you know, and taking an exam like that's not a lot of fun, but I plugged down, took the exam, and I applied one time to one medical school, and it never crossed my mind I wasn't going to get into that school, and I did get in, and so I started commuting 2 hours a day, so I'll never forget the first day of medical school, David. I arrive, and all of a sudden I realized, wow, I have a lot of life experiences. I'm like a mother to this group. I'm in my 30s. And, you know, what's amazing, the first day they assigned your cadaver, you know, go home, learn the upper extremity. All the kids run. I call them kids, but, you know, Doogie Howards, they ran into the library. And here I am getting in my car in a rainstorm, driving on the turnpike, an hour home to go feed two children and put them to bed and, you know, then study. And the rainstorm was so bad, I pulled off the road and I just started sobbing. I was just like, what have I done? Like, this isn't, why would I do this?
Yeah, how many do this?
I mean, and that was when I was filled with the most powerful feeling. And to this day, I'll never forget it. And when I asked that question, what came to me very clearly was, because you look at medicine different and you are going to change how healthcare is delivered. And from that moment forward, I was at peace with the journey. And, you know, it wasn't an easy journey with two small children. And I had my third one during medical school.
Wow.
Isn't that insane? I know. I always say, people, when they say, I can't do that, I don't like the word can't, number one. And number two, I believe you can do anything you put your mind to. And I think that's without, you know, no question.
That's an amazing accomplishment to not only have two children, but then to have another one and then put yourself through medical school. How long did it take you to get through?
6 years. So they don't cut anything off. I was actually fortunate enough. There was a combined residency program where the third and fourth year were put together. You had to be at a certain academic level and you had a previous medical career, and I fit the ticket and I'm like signed on the dotted line in a fall. Well, you're actually an MD for your own classmates. So you had to have a little bit of leadership and confidence. And so I said, perfect, 1 year less. I can get out of, you know, I wanted to keep moving forward. And as soon as I signed up for residency, which takes one of the positions, I found out I was pregnant with my 19-year-old now.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So I did the double year combined, pregnant with two small children at home. And then residency, your intern year starts July 1st. And she was born July 19th. So I, you know, I was that pregnant at that time. So, yeah.
That is a hell of a journey.
It is. And, you know, it, at the time I never questioned, you know, why am I doing this? You know, it was all, it was, I knew that was with a great purpose. And, you know, the blessings are, and you're probably noticing this in your life, I assume, but, you know, it's easier to look back and say, oh, that all makes sense. Right.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
why. I mean, it's just, you know, but when you're going through it, I really think some people would think you're absolutely crazy. You know, how, why are you doing that? How are you doing that? And it wasn't, there really wasn't a choice. It was what I knew I needed to do. And I'm so thankful that I was given whatever that drive and that, you know, following those inner calling, because as time has now gone on and I've been a medical doctor 20 years, I realized very early on that I do see things differently. I do process information different. I'm a lifelong learner in a different way because I had to problem solve for so many years as a pharmacist. Those skill sets truly empower me to be able to be a different type of doctor, because I don't have to sit and worry about the medication part. That's a second language to me that I'm very fluent in. And so it allows me to really focus on the research and the diagnostic piece. And, you know, I came out and practiced traditional for about 5 years. And I have to tell you, I always am about 10 years ahead of whatever the rest of the world's doing, like with bioidentical hormones, which people know about now. Yeah. You know, back in the late 80s, that was true witchcraft, like truly. And so, you know, the drive through, everything I'm just seemed to be doing, you know, years ahead. And but at the time I'm doing it, I just don't know what, if it's even going to be a good idea, but I just know I need to do it. And with the, I did 5 years of traditional, and a lot of doctors don't have business backgrounds. So, you know, they don't really understand that part.
Right.
Thankfully, I had businesses before. And so I saw the writing on the wall when managed care was paying $10 a month and the patient could come in every day. And, you know, the numbers don't make sense, right? It was getting harder and harder. And also, I felt like I wasn't having enough time with my patients. And I thought, well, my whole family's lawyers, they're paid by the hour. Why wouldn't I do a fee-for-service practice? So back in 2006, around in that time, I was going through a divorce, which you can imagine, doctors are very hard people to, you know, be married to. We're very focused. And I moved to an island called Roseal, Michigan. And I moved to the island because I was told it was a safe place to live, great schools. And I really wasn't that familiar. I was in that area because of my ex-husband. And but here I moved to an island of 8 to 10,000. I have no sign, and I opt out of insurance because I wanted to have more time with my patients and do it differently. Now, back in that time, that's around the time when GM was having all their problems. I'm in Detroit area looking at the Ambassador Bridge and the Rensen. And, you know, I always said, put out, you know, build it and they will come. And they did. From all over the country, they would find me. And I always knew that if a patient found me, then there was a calling for me to help them. And so as time went on, you know, the business grew and grew, and then opportunities came forward to open in Atlanta and Nashville. And those were doors that I didn't have to step through, but I knew that there was, I felt a need to. And I'm so thankful I did. You know, it's really given us the opportunity to be where I need to be now. And that is to have effectively, I want to plant seeds of change in this phase. My kids are grown, doing great. And now it's about teaching others. It's about changing how healthcare is delivered by empowering other physicians to do what we do.
That is so fantastic. Congratulations to you. That's,
thank you.
That is an amazing journey. To kind of wrap this up a little bit, if you were to, if you were to give, like, you, from your experience, either from the health, the business, the journey, any perspective you feel comfortable or called to do this, to give everybody a successful mind tip, what would be your advice to everybody today?
Well, a couple things. The first and foremost, and I believe hearing this as a child, we always heard, you know, you can do anything you put your mind to. I mean, I truly think people need to believe that. And but also life begins outside of your comfort zone, because you have to get uncomfortable, right, sometimes in order to grow. And the other, I think, is important to balance that is to do more of what makes you happy. And, you know, those would be my tip. We have to be fulfilled and happy in order to continue to be nourished and to grow. And, you know, helping others, how much better can a job be, right?
That's absolutely fantastic. I mean, it's so cool to me that you got this vision, and it became so clear that then it was like, okay, this is what I need to do. This, I need to step into this. So the obstacles didn't seem to matter at that point. I'm going to do it. And you know, I'll say this: what you said about the people around you thinking that you're crazy.
Yes.
I remember when I went through that phase in my life, not only did the people around me think I was crazy, but I had to wonder myself. Like, there were times where I was like, am I losing my mind? Is this the craziest thing that I'm following? Or is there actually something to this?
Yes.
This didn't seem to make any common sense whatsoever. But I mean, once I stepped into it, it just worked. And it sounds like it was the same for you.
It was. And I do feel that, I think most people, if they're doing something out of their comfort zone, are going to think, is this crazy? You know, but again, and that's why, though, I feel like your work is so exciting, because this happened in my life for whatever reason, starting at a young age. And, you know, I had a lot of obstacles, whatever they were, but a lot of individuals don't have the skill sets or that inside understanding that you're providing them, just like they don't have the skill sets to understand their health, to optimize and not have fear with their health and wellness. So I think it's awesome, you know, that you're helping with this, that piece, because it's changing the trajectory of their lives.
Yeah, and thank you.
It's key. It really is. So, you know, I would say great job to you, and keep up the great work.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for being on the show.
No, it's my privilege.
We'll have to do this again sometime.
Definitely. I'll look forward to it.
Awesome. All right. Talk to you soon.
Sounds great. Thanks.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Listening to the Successful Mind Podcast. And if you like what you heard and you want to know more, go to davidnagel.com/freestuff.